Welcome to Every Step Podcast. I'm Christina Weston.
And I'm Judith Beck.
Every Step is the podcast where career and life meet.
Hey, Christina. I've got a topic that is never going to end, I don't think. And it's all about working from home and having battles with employers. So I want to take you through this because I want to see what you think about this. Because I have, as you know, very specific views. An Australian dad wins work from home battle with employer. So this is a Queensland dad who has had a major win for employees wanting to work from home, taking his employer to court when it tried to implement a return to work policy. He submitted a flexible working arrangements request seeking to work from home full time. I kind of question the word flexible on that if he's seeking to work full time. But anyway, his boss advised him that he could work from home 3 days 1 week and two the next, and would have to physically attend his workplace the rest of the time. Now, I think that sounds
reasonable.
I think it sounds reasonable. Now, he appealed, and the decision to the Queensland Industrial Relations Commission, arguing he had increased productivity when working from home as a result of less distraction. I kind of question that one, but we'll talk about that. Eliminated commuting time. I agree with that. Does do that. And being more agile in response to work demands. I question Mark.
Maybe.
He said his physical health was also improved by working from home, as he had less exposure to illness in public, had reduced fatigue. I question that one, because anyone with kids, working or not, is not going to have less fatigue anyway. And he said he could exercise more often. I kind of question that one too.
Actually doing it, I think, are two different things. But anyway, keep going.
Yeah. Queensland Health argued working from home does not provide a delineation between the work and home environment and could lead to staff working longer hours. I agree with that. And could see his incidental exercise reduced, leading to him actually exercising less. I'm hearing people telling me that all the time. It also argued that his role as a manager required meaningful engagement with his team, and ad hoc communication opportunities may be limited by not being physically present in the office. So the commission ruled in his favor to set aside Queensland House decision, deciding that he could work from home the majority of the time, but would be required to be present in the office 20% of the time, which is only one day a week. And here's the result. He decided to resign that same day the decision was handed down. So obviously one day wasn't good enough. Well, what do you think about that?
Look, I suspect he was wanting to prove a point, and what concerns me about this is that it creates what could be a troubling test case that other people use as leverage. What also comes out for me in this is some of the conversation, Judith, that we talked about in our last episode around this responsibility of this blurring of personal and corporate or work and life has become increasingly blurred, and where employers used to be just responsible for your time at work, which was defined by usually set hours, now an employer's got this responsibility for you in your home and integrating your home and your life. So there's this increased blurring, and I'm wondering how many leaders are actually able to cope with that. What also comes up for me is productivity. And whilst an employer like this employer, it's a public service employer that he was arguing against, they would probably have some really good processes and structures around KPIs and those sorts of things. But I'm coaching somebody at the moment who works in an SME, and their workplace is introducing work from home, and they don't have the KPIs in place. They don't have the productivity measures. So people are just disappearing for 2-3 hours at a time, and there's no way of actually knowing what they're doing. So I think where employers have some really strong processes in place, and they've got the toolkits, they've got tools like Slack or Teams or whatever they're using to communicate, sure. But if this is a test case, if this proves to be a test case that rolls itself out into the rest of community, and the rest of community says, hey, I just want to work from home because all those arguments, it's just a little worrying. So I think there's some key issues that have come up out of this. Exercise, well, let's pick up that exercise conversation when we bring in our special guest. Distractions. I tried to work from home with a young child and there's lots of distractions. That's a great conversation to have. Productivity is a big one. And I worry about mental health. We had a great podcast session last year with Dr. Simone Scovell around mental health and working from home, the mental health issues where people falling through the cracks and not actually getting up, dressing up, showing up, and how many people are going to disappear. And are we now as leaders, employers, responsible for all of that as well, for the mental health of our people? And it kind of seems like we are. Awesome. So we've got all these new responsibilities that we didn't have when we were managing somebody that came to the office, left everything behind, walked out of the office. You know, we kind of lived with a corporate mask and a personal mask. Those masks are gone. And now where do we as employers ensure that we get the outcomes, the productivity, the cultural gains, the resilience in our teams? It's a big issue.
It's huge, and it's not going to go away anytime soon. But I do know someone who might be able to give us some great views. And I just see that our guest, Dr. Adam Fraser, has joined us. And
Hello.
Adam. For those of you who aren't familiar with Dr. Adam Fraser, he's a well-regarded human performance researcher and consultant. And he's also author of The Third Space. So if you haven't read that, go out and get it. And also soon to be released, No Thanks, Kevin. So Adam, you've been listening to us.
Yeah.
What do you make of all of this?
Oh, I was seriously
troubling about, or are we heading in the right direction?
I was thinking about running away. Like, you're talking about some big, big topics that really set people off, and there are no easy answers to. I feel like I'm walking into a setup here.
Well, I think there's an industry.
What you talk about is fascinating, and the world of work is shifting so much. And I think your conversation then was a really insightful, like even that short time unpacking, here are some of the concerns and challenging. And to tell you the truth, at the end of, before you introduced me, I thought, geez, I need a glass of wine for this podcast.
Hang on, a bottle.
I didn't want to say that, yeah. but there's a lot of stuff coming down the line.
So let's unpack some of it, because they're big issues, and they're big issues for employers. And as we were prepping for this conversation, Judith and I got into a rather heated conversation about productivity. And I think employers' number one concern, let's be honest, it's a commercial activity. They care about output and they care about productivity. Mm. How do we effectively manage productivity? And Judith, I know you've got some strong views on this one. How do we effectively manage productivity that's not at the expense of the well-being of our people?
Yeah, how do we thread that line? Look, during when COVID hit, obviously as a researcher, it's kind of like my Super Bowl. You know, this thing doesn't come along very often. And when COVID hit, I slotted in a couple of weeks to have a mini breakdown just because my business model got disrupted so much. But then we very quickly went into doing a huge amount of research with Deakin University, because we had these, you know, projects that were running, and we just said to people, let's just keep them going to see, because we're already measuring mental health and productivity and connection. Let's keep it going. So, I mean, we saw a lot of interesting findings, and it's almost, where do we begin? Look, in terms of one of our big concerns was connection to team and connection to the organization. And so we, what was it? March? When did we send everyone home? It was kind of
March 2020.
Yeah. So what we measured was a time point in around July and then one around November. And in November, what we showed is 63% of people said, hey, I really miss the physical connection with my team. Like, I just miss being in the room with them. Even though 86% of those same people said, we are nailing communication. They said, we're communicating effectively. We've really got a handle on the virtual meeting and our comms has changed. So people were thinking, we're doing a good job of it, but I miss people. And when we asked them, how connected do you feel to your organization? That dropped by 48% in late 2020 compared to before COVID. So, I mean, one of the challenges with our conversation today is because it's quite recent, there's not a huge amount of data that we can call on. I mean, you know how, you guys know how slow research, like it takes 10 years for us to get some really good findings, but they were our findings. So I think, you know, if you go to the case with that guy, yeah, he might be doing all these things, but what we're seeing is unless we do come together and we do physically connect, there is a drop-off in how loyal we feel to our group, how much we feel part of the team. So even if we just look at connection, it has been significantly affected.
Did the Industrial Relations Tribunal get it wrong?
Well, I don't even know how.
And I agree with you about we don't have enough data. This is exactly the conversation Judith and I were having beforehand, and I'm actually now thinking we should actually splice that into this conversation, Judith, because we raised some really interesting points. We don't know the outcome of these decisions just yet. They're so soon. I mean, we're only just grappling with the industrial revolution of our time now, and there's some landmark decisions being made that could pave the way for a completely different setup of working and how we work. And we actually don't know the long-term ramifications. We don't know the impact on resilience. Yeah. We don't know whether there's a direct correlation in terms of mental health or disconnection or people not feeling valued. Or, I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And I guess we don't know. We can predict, we can surmise, we can make some assumptions, but the fact is that we won't know, to your point, Adam, for a little while. And that in itself is troubling because we're going down a path that is creating even potentially more separation.
Yeah. And I just, there's so many things I love about what you just said then. And as a researcher, we have to be very careful about our assumptions. And also, that applies to me, so it must be true. You know, we did a big research project looking at financial advisors in Australia and New Zealand over the last 4 years. And we had assumptions, which was older people aren't connecting with technology as much as the new advisors, that the older advisors would have worse mental health because they've worked a certain way and now all the regulations have changed. So the new people coming in would be great. What we saw is the mental health of the group up to 29 was 400 times more likely to be in a high risk category for mental health.
Wow.
And people over 60 were rocking it. They were like, they were awesome. But also, like, the older generation were embracing technology as much as the younger. So my point is that we have to be very careful about our assumptions, and we're making a lot of assumptions about this whole work from home. And look, you know, if you listen to Judith, you know, you listed all those things that guy was saying, and cognitively you go, yeah, I get that. Less interruptions, less exposure to illness. I can exercise more. I can have breaks. But who knows if that's actually occurring? I mean, one thing we found in our research is people were saying that they were sitting at their desks all day, not moving. And by the fourth meeting, their brain was mush. Like
completely.
Yeah, they hadn't got outside. They hadn't connected. They hadn't stood up even. So, I mean, we could go back and forwards on this.
Because there's a bit of exercise that you got when you went into the office.
Incidental,
yeah. The fact that you, I mean, if you look at the Japanese, they have the highest percentage of people 100 plus. And when they studied them, they found it wasn't because they went to the gym every day and they did this. It was just their everyday routine that kept them healthy and kept them because they were active. And the same thing when you you drive into the city, you park your car, you have to walk two or three blocks, or you might be walking to the train station two and three times. So you take a break from your desk and go down and get a coffee. That's walking. Yep. It would be really interesting to do a research study with Fitbits of a certain number of people in the office and a certain number of people working from home and see who has the most steps.
Unless you're disciplined, I think it requires a level of discipline.
Yeah, discipline, but how many people are really that disciplined? How many people have bought their membership and never used it? So it's that incidental exercise that is forced upon you that actually keeps you, and you don't have a refrigerator that you can just pop into and go and grab another piece of the carrot cake that you made last time.
Yeah. I mean, there's all these factors too, but, you know, you were talking about disconnection at the end of the day. And, you know, I have worked in both models. Like, I've worked in a large university, I've worked in a corporation, I've worked in, you know, a small business in my home and, you know, a small business in an office. And I go stir crazy if I stay at home all the time. Like, literally, I'm going insane. And when people started to work from home, what we found is 65% of them said, now that I'm working at home, I find it much more difficult to separate home mode and work mode. Like, they just said those worlds have blurred, and I'm working on the dining table and I'm cooking dinner, but I'm still checking emails, or I'm trying to get my kid ready for an activity and I'm still like answering the phone. So, you know, 2/3 of people said, yeah, I'm finding it really hard. Around 50% of people said that they had no strategy. Like, they just didn't think about, well, how do I change those gears? And similar to the previous finding, you know, 64% of people said that I'm working more in my personal time now that I'm working from home. So you guys were talking about the blurring of those lines, and that is incredibly true. And I mean, this data, we've taken thousands of people across different types of professions, industries, and also more than half of people said, I'm working more hours as well. And they estimated it was 5 to 10 hours more when they switched to working from home.
And I wonder whether that's because they had interruptions and lower levels of productivity because their life blurred into their work, or whether they just were at home, so there were blurred boundaries, so they just kept working.
Look, and also what you have to factor in is some things that confound this data too, which is this was taken at the end of that first year of COVID, and a lot of people felt guilty about working from home and that I have to prove myself, or were worried about, will I keep my job? So I've got to overperform. So there are, I mean, the data I'm talking about here is quite early in that piece and would have possibly changed since we've been doing it for a while.
I don't know if you remember this or not. You might be, and if I've got the theory wrong, let me know. But I think it was called Murphy's theory or something like that, where basically when you're in the office and you know you only got a certain amount of time to do a task, you actually get it done during that time. But if you know you've got you know, a lot longer time, then that cost will get stretched out. And I wonder whether or not that's the issue of working from home too. You could think, oh, well, I'm here, I've got all day to do this, I'll do that. So the task will, you know, it doesn't matter if I get it done right now, where if you're in the office, I need to get this by 2 because I've got a meeting, then I've got to go here, where you don't, you make sure you get it done rather than stretch it out. And I don't know if it's called Murphy's Law or something.
Murphy's Law is different.
Judith, it's a brilliant point. And it kind of, there's that famous quote, work expands the allotted time. So if you give something an hour, it takes an hour. But if you go, oh, I've got so much time to work on, it takes me back to my uni days where you go, oh, I got 3 weeks for that. And then you're up the night before, you know, cramming and punching it out. So I think that is part of it too, is that our day kind of misses some sort of structure as well.
So this is really interesting, because this is all around productivity again and getting best outcomes for people and helping people be more disciplined. I don't know that we as workers or we as leaders actually have the skills to put these sorts of things in place, because it used to be that we would just manage the work at hand. And now we're having to manage the human being. I mean, we've always kind of had an eye to the human being, but now we're having to manage the human in all its dimensions. And we had a conversation in our last episode around diversity and a whole range of different things. So we're having to embrace the entire human, no matter how that human shows up, across a spectrum that's very blurred. And what concerns me is I don't believe leaders are well equipped to do that yet.
Man, yeah, I think that is such a good summary and a really insightful point. And this is something we're seeing in our research so much. So you've now got leaders responsible for psychosocial safety of people.
Correct.
You know, they're bringing in the right to disconnect at the end of the day. So I just think you're bang on in terms of we are asking leaders to do so much. And the funniest thing happened recently. And I was speaking to some partners in a professional services firm. So most of them had trained as accountants. And we're having this conversation. And one guy in the group goes, do you remember when you just had to be good at your job? Yes. What happened to that? And it's so right. Like you're having, and even with my team, you know, the other day we were having conversations because a couple of people in my team have mental health challenges around anxiety or a bit of OCD. And we do huddles, and one of them was talking about, oh yeah, and my anxiety is really high today. So if you notice this, and we were talking about, well, how can we help you do that? And I just kind of looked around and went, man, how futuristic is this conversation? You know, we would never have talked about that even 5 or 10 years ago. So we're having to look at the whole person. And where I'm finding this really scary is in schools. So we have a branch of our business called the Flourish Movement, which does a lot of research and interventions around school leaders and effectiveness of school leaders. And what I'm seeing is teachers and educators have become the social workers of society. Mm-hmm. And they're just like literacy and numeracy is such a small part of what they do. And we're about to do a research study looking at the impact of vicarious trauma on educators. And vicarious is also known as secondhand trauma, but they're having, because they're doing trauma-informed practice. If this child's had trauma, how do I work with them? But no one's asked, what pressure does that put on the educator? So going back to your question, I think you are so right, where leaders are expected to do so much today.
Yeah. And when you're in a psychological practice or you're in a counseling practice, it's essential to have that kind of support, and any of those practices have supervision, right?
Yeah.
To actually support the people that are doing those, doing those roles and having those conversations. But you know, to your example, Adam, the teachers, where's their supervision to support them to do this? For leaders, they're also dealing with the trauma of their people, dealing with mental health issues, dealing with a whole range of, you know, domestic violence, a whole range of different issues. Where's their supervision? Who's supporting them? Who's skilling them up with counselling skills? You know, I did a whole diploma in counselling. Took me 2 years to do the diploma. And
that's you, like a person who educates themselves in this area, who is naturally curious. Imagine you're a I don't mean to be sexist, but imagine you're a 60-year-old male engineer, like, and you're starting to move into this space. Like, their head must be exploding in the, oh man, I'm not equipped for this. I've never seen this modeled in the workplace before. Like,
well, you can't actually support others unless you understand yourself. So you actually have to have done the work yourself and be able to connect to emotions and be able to articulate those. And that's a whole different conversation. But, you know, if you don't know yourself, you can't support others. Yeah. So it's a bit like that, you know, that aeroplane with a you know, gas mask or something's going down. Give it to yourself first before you support others. So this is opening up this is a whole new industry. Hey, there's an opportunity here. There's obviously, you know, this is going to be big. And I just wonder how well equipped we all are to support the leaders and the organizations of the future.
Yeah, exactly. And we were talking about before we started recording that, you know, at the end of the day, companies wouldn't require people to come back to the office if there wasn't a really good reason, because it's a heck of a lot easier, really, to have your workforce, you know, working from home.
You've got cheaper, you don't have to pay rent.
You don't have to pay. There's a lot of good positive reasons why to do that. So for them to come back and say, we need you there at least 3 days a week, because I think the solution that this lady gave to this person was very fair. You know, 3 days 1 week, 2 days the next, and that would be,
it seemed reasonable.
It seemed reasonable. Totally. It seemed reasonable. And if the argument is, well, I've got kids at home, but hold on a second. If you've got kids at home, who's looking after them while you're working?
Yeah.
So are they running? See, this is where I think it's a minefield for employers who haven't gone through it. The moral of the story is they need to get experts in to put together a good work from home strategy and plan, because we were talking about, well, okay, you have the home office, and then little Johnny comes in and little Johnny starts climbing up the bookshelf while you're on the phone to your client or to there. And then you've got to, there's two scenarios. You stop because you need to help your child so they don't get hurt. And then you lose your place and you either input something wrong or say something or whatever. Yeah. That's a business risk. How do we handle that? Then you have the risk of your children. What if little Johnny did get hurt? Is it a workplace issue? Is it a claim? I mean, companies have to think Johnny was in the office and Johnny tripped over a computer wire that I was using or something, you know. So is the company responsible? I mean, this is a minefield, I think.
Yeah. It's a nightmare scenario. I was in a Zoom meeting the other day and there was probably six people, and a woman on the Zoom, I noticed in the background that her child came in the room and was swinging something around his head. I don't know what it was. And this mum, literally, as he walked past, grabbed the thing that was in his hand and took it off. She didn't even break eye contact. It's like she was a ninja or something. But it was just, you know, the child came in, you know, did distract everyone. Clearly, you know, she's going to be feeling that pressure. But I just think, here's a question I have for both of you. Do you think, because when we talk about well-being in the workplace, I often see people fall into one of two camps. One, it's the organization's responsibility, reduce workload, have all these services available, or people kind of go, it's all down to the person. And is this ruling and where we're going, creating a victim mentality for the person where they look at their organization and go, well, it's your job to take care of me?
I think there's, and this is where we talk about the blurring, and that's why sort of my opening remarks were a little bit around, it's a little bit troubling, because I think you've just articulated the other side of it. It's right now, and it's partly because of the economic situation that we've got. So there's still relatively low levels of unemployment, and there's still some skill shortages, which is slowly shifting. But as long as we've got that imbalance, as long as we've got relatively high levels of employment, I think the balance of power sits with the employee. And this is what's troubling with some of these test cases at the moment. But the pendulum will swing. It will swing, and people will become more concerned about their jobs, and they'll pull their head in and they'll toe the line because they need income. But this test case is a little worrying, because it says you, the employee, have the power, and we, the Industrial Commission or whoever it was, is going to back you in that. Now, we don't know all the evidence that he had. We don't know what actual job he did and why it was okay for him to win, but it does kind of put more responsibility on the employer to look after all my needs.
Yeah. I can tell you exactly why he won. It's because the people who are making the decision wasn't an entrepreneurial organization. Talking about, and so it is then becomes all about the employee, and the employee is entitled, and this, that, and the other thing. And my view has long been that it's equal, that it should be a meeting of two, like what, you know, the employee is there to
energy
do
exchange
a job, and the employee is hiring adults, and they are then providing benefits, and that's why that person wants to work there. So the employee always has to offer something and a reason why somebody should want to work at that organization, but you've got to deliver the goods as well. And, you know, there's no way I would have had anybody that had that kind of attitude working for me. Yeah. That, because I would have thought, well, okay, hold on a second. We're being as flexible as we possibly can. You know, we're giving you, like, working from home, that's fine. Well, you know, everything. But if you're telling me that you want to work home for full time, and that's a flexible work arrangement, the two don't make flexible, and full time is not the same thing. So his argument, I can't believe that was actually, they bought that.
I would love to have been a fly on the wall in that case to actually see what the actual legal arguments were, because that in itself would have been fascinating to understand why the tribunal ruled the way that they did after the employer was seemingly quite reasonable.
And part of being a manager, this person's a manager, so part of being a manager is being around your team and hearing what they're doing and saying. And you can't do that if you're not in there seeing and hearing what they're doing. Because often as a manager, you might have the people that work for you around you, and you can hear what they're saying to the client, or they might have an answer, or they might have a question that they might want to ask you because you're standing there. Where if they're at home, they think, oh, I don't want to call my boss and ask him this question.
Well, they've got teams. I can argue. They've got teams. They've got whatever, Slack.
Yeah, but you hear it, like the young ones that are just coming up. They're shy. And you think back when you first started and you think, oh, okay, I need to ask my boss this, but I don't want to bother them. I don't want to that. But if they were standing there, you might go, oh, what do you think about this? Does this look okay?
Yeah. And rather
they don't than want to falling look- over it for 3 hours, thinking whether or not you got it right or not, you got somebody there just to give you a little bit of reinsurance. Or even your boss who says, oh, I heard you speak to that client on the phone. You did a great job. That sounded really good. Well done. Where are you going to get that? On Teams or Slack or any of that, because they're not going to have a microphone listening to you. That's another management issue.
And I was coaching somebody at the moment who had a very, very similar scenario where one of her there was obviously a miscommunication around what was going on, and the individual that works for her wasn't doing the job right, but that person came from a particular cultural background and quite young, wasn't actually asking for clarification, and wasn't, there was this kind of disconnect between what was being requested and what was coming out. And it actually meant that the manager had to put a whole lot more work into getting clarification, active listening, double checking, creating coaching opportunities, because there's a whole stream of people that don't want to look stupid, don't want to look like they don't understand. So they won't ask. They'll just nod.
Yeah, it's going to be really fascinating. Obviously our leadership style has to change dramatically, but it'd be good to see some real like peer-reviewed research on how does hybrid effect collaboration, generation of ideas, in terms of a brainstorming piece.
Innovation.
Yeah, innovation. And look, I mean, but once again, we have to not be too careful, or we have to be careful not to demonize that style of working as well. Because one thing we did measure, as well as connection to organization and team, we also measured connection to leader. And in around April and May, we saw a big kick up in how connected people felt to their leader. And the reason was that leaders for the first time started to have real genuine conversations about well-being and how people were going. And, you know, it might be we're having a meeting and I say, hey, Judith, can you just stay on for a couple of minutes? You stay on. I say to you, hey, Judith, how are you coping with all this and working from home? Like, how are you? And you go, yeah, I'm great. Like, obviously it's tough, but I'm fine. And then the leader went, nah, Judith, like, I really want to know, how are you going? Because this is hard. I'm finding it hard. And that genuine questioning with the intent to really understand, that connected teams to their leader. So I think, you know, working remotely, it does require a change of leadership, but I think there's still so many things we can achieve, but it does require leaders to look at it and go, well, how am I going to adapt and evolve? And even, you know, the productivity piece, we've clearly got to improve our communication metrics around, you know, this is what I expect, or this is what I want you to work on. Yeah, it's going to be hard.
Yeah,
it is. It is. Someone said to me the other day, if a company is working from home 100%, like they let you work from home 100%, and you're in a, let's say, an IT role, then what's to stop that company? And I know there's a lot of them out there doing it now anyway, but if they go to the full work from home, well, then what's to stop them from just hiring people from overseas at cheaper?
They're doing that already.
I know they're doing it now, but already. This is what's clicking with some people. They're thinking, well, okay, if my company goes 100% work from home, then is my job at risk? Because they can probably hire somebody from another country cheaper. And
in some businesses, that's already happening. You look at call centers, you look at IT.
But this is what people are saying now, when the penny is starting to drop, and they're thinking, oh, okay, now I get it. If this goes full time, then I'm at risk. And that's true, because it goes back to that loyalty of company, but it also goes to loyalty of employee. Like, in other words, the company needs to be loyal to the employee as much as the employee needs to be loyal to the company. And how do they build that unity and sense of loyalty to a workforce that they don't see? So they have to decide. They have to decide how they're going to make those connections via probably hybrid is probably, in my view, the best model, where you're 3 days in and maybe 2 days working from home, that kind of, or some other kind of flexibility, but at least somewhere where you're getting that connection with your workforce and with your company. Because I remember when I did executive search, the hardest thing to move candidates out of one company to another was their loyalty, because I could not break the loyalty unless the salary level was so much higher and it was a higher level, if they were loyal to the company that they worked for, that was the hardest thing to move.
Yeah, it'll come down to cultural issues. I think we're already in a world of globalization. I think we're already in a world of remote, full-time or hybrid, and it just depends on how far that pendulum swings, and it ultimately comes back to the things we've been talking about. Are our leaders skilled enough, equipped enough? The technology's there. Are our leaders equipped enough and skilled enough to carry this next generation through in a way that holds them, manages their mental health, and achieves the outcomes and productivity that businesses are seeking to achieve? Because ultimately, we're in a capitalist environment. That's what we want. We're all profit seekers. Well, you know, corporates are profit seekers in one way, or you don't want to be for loss. And there's just some uplifting skills that we're going to see.
Well, that's where this research is.
Yeah, the research
is so important, because the reality is, if the research is then saying to us mental health and a depression, those types of things are worse because people are not connected and things like that, we don't want to find that out in 10 years' time.
Yeah.
Might take that long.
It might take that long. But I think I would say to people who are listening to this, whether they're owners of companies or they're employees, that at the end of the day, if you're starting a new business or in a business, you have to do what you think is right for your business. And if you think a hybrid model is best for your business, and you want people to come in and collaborate and work, don't be pressured by what you're seeing on LinkedIn and some of the things where, oh, that's old fuddy. You do what's right for you. And the opposite applies as well. If you think you're going to be more successful by having a full work from home workforce, then do it. Be your own leader of your own business. Mm. And as a person, as an employee, you got to choose what's right for you as well. You know, just because I want to be in the office and connect and be with people, that doesn't mean somebody else isn't happy working from home. But, you know, you got to find the right company that will accommodate that.
Yeah. And I think actually one thing I'd like to say that came out of the research is that ability to have boundaries is so important. One thing we measure is boundary strength, which is the ability to separate work and home. And what we find is people that have strong boundary strength, mental health risk is far lower, well-being is far better, obviously work-life balance is better. There's all these really important metrics that come from that. And one thing we consistently heard is people said, man, now that my commute's been taken away, I find that very hard, because the commute was almost like a punctuation mark at the end of the day. And one thing we found, particularly working mothers, said that commute was the only me time I got. And in that commute, I called a girlfriend, or I called, someone in my family, or I would read a book on the train. I don't get to read. Or I'd listen to music or a podcast on the bus. And what they said is, I use that time to decompress, and that's been taken away. So, yeah, and this relates to our third space research, which is, if you're working from home, you have to have something that creates, I'm now moving into family time. And whether you have a late night call, whether you've got to go back to your email, but you've just got to have something that goes, I'm shifting into personal mode, whether you live on your own, whether you have a partner, whether you have a family. How do I start to change those gears? And, you know, just for people listening, if you are working from home, you've got to have something that makes that apparent. We don't just want to go from, I'm in the study, or I'm in the, you know, I'm at the dining table, and now all of a sudden I'm starting to do domestic things. So that's my kind of soapbox moment.
I think boundary management is a really important topic. We could talk about this forever, because, as you quite rightly said, Adam, at the beginning, there are so many big issues here to impact, so many issues to unpack, and so many issues that impact us all. Thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate your insights. And for anyone that wants to get a copy of the research or the books, we'll have some links in the podcast notes. So yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for your time.
Hey, absolute pleasure. Really fascinating conversation. Thank you.
Oh, listen, and look, just as a little teaser for next week's episode, we're going to be talking about companies, company brands, and should you follow a company that maybe doesn't have a good history. And one of the things that Christina and I were talking about is I watched this series on Apple on Coco Chanel, and I'm devastated about her background. And next week, we'll talk about why I may not buy Chanel number 5 again. But and also the other top, one of the other topics will be, should you be a whistleblower? And what you should do. So these are some of the many topics that we're going to talk about next week. So thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
For more information about Every Step and our guests, head to everystepodcast.com. To be notified of new podcasts, please subscribe via your favorite listening platform. And of course, follow us on social media and direct message us to share your ideas about guests or topics.